So we are holding on Samach Beis Amud Aleph, three lines above the Mishnah, lines in Sinai. So finishing off what we said in the previous Mishnah, we mentioned various things that a person is not allowed to wear on Shabbos and the Midrabanan. We said v'loy b'shirian, v'loy b'kasta, v'loy b'magafayim. So let's define what those are, we already defined them in English in the Mishnah. Shirian means zoda, means a coat of armor, a coat of mail. Kasta amar rab sanavarta. Kasta, rab says, means a helmet that you wear, that a person wears to battle. Rashi actually mentions over here, you have the metal helmet, and then underneath it, a metal helmet is uncomfortable to wear directly on the head, so you have a leather helmet that goes inside it. Rashi learns that it means that one. Means the leather helmet, which would mean, in other words, all the more so, the metal helmet. And magafayim amarav kuzmiki, and the magafayim Rab says means army boots, iron boots. So all of them, midaraisa, you're allowed to wear them on Shabbos because they are clothing after all. Midrabanan, the chachamim don't want you to because it's going to look like you're going out to battle. Obviously, if you are going out to battle, if it is a situation where you're fighting on Shabbos, that's different. But we're talking about where there's not. Mishnah says, so now let's talk about things that a person is not allowed to wear on Shabbos outside Midaraisa. So the Mishnah starts, well, take the issue of a machat hanekuva, a woman is not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a needle that has a hole in it. So before, in the first Mishnah, we mentioned a needle that did not have a hole, and we said that we mentioned that kind in many cases, she's also to wear dirabanan, because we said she may take it off and show it off to her friends. We said it's the kind where she uses one end of it. We discussed a couple of days ago. It's the kind where she uses one end of it to part her hair, and then on Shabbos she wears it as a pin, showing off the wide end. We said there's like a gold plate at the end of it. So we said that's also midrabanan because she may show it off, but here we're talking about where it does have a hole in it, and that kind of thing is not normal to use to hold her clothing together or to pin her hat or whatever, and therefore it would actually be also daraisa. Also not with a ring that has a signet on it. So again, before we mentioned that she's not allowed to wear on Shabbos a ring that doesn't have a signet, midrabanan, for the same reason, because she may take it off and show it off. But one that has a signet is not a normal thing for women to wear, as we're going to see in the Gemara, and therefore would actually be off the daraisa, because it would be considered carrying. The loy bekulyar, she's also not allowed to wear on Shabbos a kulyar, which is something we'll see in the Gemara. We'll see in the Gemara a couple of possibilities what a kulyar is. Whatever it is, again, it's something that'll be considered carrying. V'loy b'kevelis, also not wearing a kevelis, which is an ornament where they put besamim inside it. So we'll see in the Gemara what the problem is with wearing it. We'll see in the Gemara what the problem is with wearing it on Shabbos. V'loy b'tzloches shel payotin, or not with a container of palyotin. Palyotin is some kind of fragrant oil. Rashi translates it as shemen afarsimon, as balsam oil, which we talked about earlier in the Masechta. So again, the idea is that she wears it normally around her neck or something. In particular, we'll see in the Gemara, the bat and the kevelas, a woman wears if she has body odor. If she goes out wearing any of those things on Shabbos, then she's chayev chatas divrei Meir. Meir says that all of them she's chayev chatas because even the last couple of each of those things is not considered a tashit. The needle with a hole is not the kind of thing you normally use to hold clothing together. So therefore, to pin on a hat or whatever. So therefore, it's considered carrying it on Shabbos. Because even if you're using it, the point is that even if you're using it in the way that you'd usually use a pin with a hole, the fact is this is not the kind of pin that's normally used for the purpose. So therefore, in effect, it's like carrying it. The Alter Rebbe points out in Shulchan Aruch that actually, even if Even you could argue, okay, but if she has it pinned to her clothing, how is it considered carrying on Shabbos? But no, because even during weekdays, it happens sometimes a person sticks pins into their clothing, like a tailor or whatever, to transport them from place to place. So therefore, on Shabbos, it would be considered carrying. The ring, we said women don't wear rings with signets. A kulyar, we'll see in the Gemara what it is, but we'll see that most women don't wear it, so therefore it can't be considered a tachshit. And all the other things, and the kivelos and the slichos shopayotin, are also, the mayor doesn't consider them a tachshit, he considers that it's just carrying, because you're only wearing them for body odor, and therefore it can't be considered a tachshit. Racham and poetry, the kivelos and the slichos shopayotin, racham says he's potter with the last two, because they say that only Madrabanan is also to wear those on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Omar Olav Chilufeihen Be'ish. We said as far as rings, that a woman's ring without a signet, she's also Madrabanan to wear on Shabbos. And if it has a signet, if it has a stamp attached to it, then she's also Daraisa to wear it. So Olav says the reverse is true for a man. A man, if he wears on Shabbos a ring without a signet, is chayav chatos. And if he wears one with a signet, then he's potter. But still also midrabanan, because again, he may take it off and show it off to his friend. Now what it is you actually, we've talked about before in the perek that you have a machlokes rishonim. You have a machlokes rishonim whether this whole concept of that men are going to take off their ornaments or their accessories or whatever and show them off, is that we say that with women, is that necessarily true with men? So if we say actually, which Tosfos says that we don't, Tosfos says that you don't do that. So Tosfos learns therefore that it's only talking about the part that's chayav chatos. When we say that a woman wears a ring with a signet on Shabbos, she's chayav chatos. The reverse would be true for a man if he wears one without a signet, then he's chayav chatos, because that's not the normal kind of ring that a man wears. But Tosfos says that it doesn't mean necessarily that the opposite is true, that one without a signet, a man would be chayav chatos, or without a signet, that he'd be also, because he may take it off and show it off, because that the one without a signet, he would be chayav chatos, fine, because that's not normal for him to wear, so it's considered carrying it. But one with a signet, we're not necessarily going to say, is also dirabanan for a man, because not necessarily is he the type who's going to take it off and show it off. You have a further discussion also whether this statement of Ola's applies also to the needle that we mentioned in the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah and in an earlier Mishnah that a needle without a hole is also Darabanan, and one with a hole is also Daraisa. So are we saying the reverse is true for a man? On the face of it, not. Rashi, Rabbi Chanano mentioned it only in connection with the ring. The Rif and the Rambam actually mention it regarding needles as well, and the Rishonim have a bit of a time discussing what would be the difference. Why for a man should it be allowed to use a needle with a hole to hold his clothing together, according to them. All right, but in any case, with a ring, we're saying a man would not. So again, one way of understanding Ola is that a man is not allowed to wear either kind of ring either. But if it's without a signet, then it's also daraisa. And if it's with a signet, then it's also darabanan. And the other way of learning him is that if it's without a signet, it's also daraisa. And if it's with a signet, then it's actually mutter. Alma kasava Ola. So we see therefore that we see therefore that Ola says, that anything which is suitable for a man as a tachshit is not suitable for a woman necessarily, and vice versa, something which is suitable as a tachshit for a woman is not necessarily for a man. In other words, Ula is telling like this, without what Ula said, we would think, let's say, so women usually wear rings without signets, therefore, we're asking it for them because we don't want them to take it off and show it off. But why would we say that it's also daraisa for a man? On the face of it, once it's a tachshit for a woman, then it should be acceptable for a man to wear it as well. So Ola is telling us not, and vice versa. As in vice versa as far as a signet. We don't say that just because it's a tachshit for one, then automatically it would be a tachshit for it's automatically considered, at least on a daraisa level, a tachshit for the other one. The problem with that is, most of Rabbi Yosef, says, I have a contradiction. A braita says, Haroyim Yotzim B'sakin, shepherds are allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing sacks or sackcloth or whatever, because that's what they usually wear to protect themselves when they're out in the field. The loy haroyim bilvad amru, and actually then the Chachamim said, that doesn't apply only to shepherds, ela kol adam, anybody is allowed to wear anybody's allowed to wear that kind of sackcloth on Shabbos. So why do we mention shepherds? Ela shetakim, shal haroyim, what is the sacking? It's normal for shepherds to go around wearing sacks, so therefore we mention that. But in fact, other people are allowed to as well. We're going to have examples later on in our parak as well, where you have things that certain people wear in certain places, and other people are allowed to wear them in other places, even though it's not the local fashion. So the same thing over here. Once shepherds are allowed to wear them, then so is everybody else. So the same thing. Why shouldn't we say by the same way that, for example, a ring, let's say, without a signet, should be considered a tachshit for a man just as much as for a woman, and therefore, what are you telling me? He's chayav chatas for it. He should be either mutter according to Tosfos, or also drabanon according to Rashi, because he may take it off and show it off. But why would he chayav daraisa? Once it's something which can be worn by women, the same way as we're saying over here that once sacks can be worn by shepherds, they can be worn by anybody else. The same thing should be true as far as a ring without a signet, a plain ring. So why are we saying that? The answer is Ella, Amar Rav Yosef, Kasava Ula Noshim Ambefne Asmanhen. What it is Ula holds that women relative to men are considered like a separate nation. So therefore, when it comes to the sacks that shepherds wear, then fine. The shepherds are not part of a separate nation than the rest of Jewish people. We're talking about Jewish shepherds, obviously. So therefore, they're Jewish men. So other Jewish men are also allowed to wear sacks on Shabbos. But Rabbi Yosef is saying, Ula apparently holds that women and men are considered as though they were two different nations, and just because something is mutter for one of them doesn't automatically make it mutter for the other. So therefore, that would be why. So just because we say that one type of ring can be worn by women, daraisa, and only drabanan as a saucer, we're not going to say therefore that the same thing is true for men. Okay. The problem is, Eisfei Abaya. Abaya says, I have a problem with that svara, because we learn in a Mishnah in Eruvin, in the last parak. We touched on this yesterday in connection with the question of wearing tefillin on Shabbos. So Ellie, you mentioned that you have the case where you find tefillin out in the field or whatever, and you need to bring them into safety. So the Mishnah in the beginning of the last parak of Eruvin discusses this point and says, "Hamotzit tefillin." If a person finds tefillin on Shabbos, machnitzan zug, you can bring them into the city one pair at a time. Meaning, you put on a shoyad and a shorosh the same way as you do on weekdays, and then you bring them in. You bring them into the city and put them away safely, and then you go back to the next pair and so on and so forth. And echad isha. Actually, it's not a mission, actually. It's a braisa, because the part about men and women is only in a braisa. But whatever. The braisa says this is true of both men and women. So if a woman finds tefillin out in the field on Shabbos, she can also wear them one pair at a time and bring them in.
Do you make a bracha when that's the case?
The pastor's not, because she's not putting it, he or she are not putting it on for the sake of the mitzvah. They're putting it on in order to save them. So the pastor's, you wouldn't make a bracha on them, but whatever. Anyway, the question is, the Amrit Noshim Amrit Me'asmanein, if you're telling me that women are considered a separate nation, then why would they be allowed to? V'ham mitzvahs esesh azman groma hu, isn't tefillin a mitzvahs esesh azman groma, v'chol mitzvahs esesh azman groma noshim pturos, and we know that women are potter from mitzvahs esesh azman groma, therefore, in other words, that for them, if we're saying noshim amit me'asmanhein, it should be considered that what applies to men doesn't apply to women, and therefore for women it should be considered carrying on Shabbos, because they don't wear tefillin, so therefore it should be also for them to wear tefillin, because for them it should be considered a burden. So why? So Mela, in other words, if it's only Drabbanan, then okay, the Chachamim are going to then the Chachamim are going to bend that rule in order for you to save the Tefillin. But if you're going to tell me, but if you're going to tell, in fact, Tosfos points out that the fact of the matter is, again, you're not carrying it in the normal way. You're not carrying it in your hand. You're wearing it. But nevertheless, if we say that for women are not supposed to be wearing tefillin, and it could conceivably be a mastery if you don't wear it, but rather you carry it, then the Chachamim shouldn't be allowing it for women to do, even if it was a matter of bezoyin. So you see that we don't hold of noshim amif ne'atzmanhem. The answer is hosam kasavur of meyo lila lavzman tefillin who v'shabbos lavzman tefillin, because in fact the difference is that Rav Meir holds like this. Now we have a couple of machlokes in various places in Shas about when exactly are tefillin supposed to be worn. You have one opinion which you have one machlokes which is can you wear tefillin at night or not, and you have another machlokes Shabbos Zman tefillin or not, which we mentioned yesterday. So Rav Meir holds in both of them that it is a valid time for tefillin. Therefore, havalei mitzvah etzer shalayas man groma. So it comes out according to him there is no time when you're potter from tefillin. There is no time when they potter from tefillin, not at night and not on Shabbos. So it's not a mitzvah etzer shalayas man groma. And the v'chol mitzvah etzer shalayas man groma noshim chayavos. So when you have a mitzvah etzer shalayas man groma, women are chayav in it just as much as men. So the mayor, who is the Tana of that Mishnah, would say that in that case, women are in fact allowed to wear the tefillin on Shabbos to bring them in, same as men, because he holds that even during the weekdays, women should be wearing tefillin as well. But in fact, according to if we didn't hold like either one of those things, if we held you don't wear tefillin at night, or we held you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos, and of course, if you hold both of them, then tefillin becomes a mitzvah as a shazman groma. And then, yes, if we say noshim amba pnei asman hain, then in fact they would not be allowed to wear the tefillin on Shabbos even in order to save them.
Did Rav Meir ever see a woman putting on a shul and had to get minyan?
I don't know. I guess
I've seen. So the idea is got to be something. He's a tana. He's not like some man. You know. He's saying something.
Right, well,
he had some women putting on a shul.
Well, I mean, he would have held, you know, he holds his way, but Pashtus, he would have made sure in his household, he would have made sure, for example, that Druya and his daughters, if he had any daughters, I don't know, would wear tefillin. Did he see people in the wider world wearing? I don't know, but the fact is, this is what he learned from Ezra Bey.
Okay.
And in fact, actually, it's interesting, you have a whole sugya in Kiddushin that discusses the question, b'chlal, how do we know in general that women are potter from mitzvah seseh shazman groma? So the Gemara has a whole sugya over there about on the subject, and one possibility, that so the Gemara discusses one way of doing it is by making a hekesh between tefillin and Talmud Torah, which women are potter from Talmud Torah, because it says v'shinantam levonecha, and then you have a hekesh between that and tefillin, because tefillin are mentioned right after that in the Pesukim, and therefore, so just like tefillin are mitzvah tesa shazman groma, so we've learned from that to other mitzvah tesa shazman groma. So we see from our Gemara over here, so the Gemara mentions over there that the Gemara has a whole discussion about how you learn it and why you don't say that you learn from other places where we see that women are chayav in certain mitzvah tesa shazman groma, for example, masa. And the Gemara mentions over there, the Gemara explains over there that actually the mayor does not accept that hekesh. So actually, it comes out. So on the surface, you could learn that Gemara to say that the mayor still says women are potter, but based on other grounds. But from our Gemara over here, we see that actually the mayor would say if he doesn't accept the hekesh, then he actually has no grounds to pass to them, and he would actually say that women are chayiv in tefillin. Again, the halacha being, given that the halacha is not like that, given that the halacha is that nighttime and Shabbos are not zman tefillin, which actually is that what it says in Shulchan Aruch is that if a man finds tefillin out in the field and he does that, he wears them one pair at a time. Actually, in Shulchan Aruch it says you can wear two pair at a time because you have, just like nowadays, in principle, a person could wear Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin at the same time. There is room enough on the head for the two of them, we just don't. But in principle, therefore, if he finds these two, and he can put them on two pair at a time. But women, it says, can't do that. If she finds them, then she can't do that. She has to just watch them until nighttime, because then otherwise it'd be carrying on Shabbos, and you can't do an Issur D'oraisa. She can't do an Issur D'oraisa in order to save the tefillin.
Question.
Yeah.
Women would not be allowed to wear tefillin when they need her. So therefore, tefillin for them
has nothing to do with nidah or not. Has to do with that we're saying. Oh, so we're talking about on Shabbos. On Shabbos.
No, I understand that.
Okay.
I understand. No, but when they nidah, they would not be allowed to wear tefillin. So it would still be Isman Grama.
It's not. It does mention in Shulchan Aruch that when women are nidah, they shouldn't touch a sefer Torah or things like that.
Yes, by analogy.
Right, but. That's not an actual. It's not that they're also to. The concept is brought in Shulchan Aruch, but Meikra didn't. They're allowed to. It's really a minhag. In the Shulchan Aruch, it brings yesh kosvu that I'm all right. Yesh kosvu that an isha nida should not go into shul or daven or touch a sefer Torah, etc. The yesh anyim that she's mutter v'chein ikra. The minhag in these countries is like the svara harishona. So it's not actually. Also, according to it's a matter of minhag. So that wouldn't be reason enough to prevent her wearing the tefillin and in order to save them if necessary. But here we're talking about where it's on Shabbos, and since we're saying Noshim Amos Me'asmanhein, then therefore it would be also. All right, let's go on. It's not an actual technical law. Okay, onward. The question is okay. So now let's get back to the matter of the ring. So again, we're saying that if a woman wears a signet ring on Shabbat, she's chayav chatos. So why? Isn't that a not normal way of carrying? The normal way of carrying would be to hold it in her hand. So why should we chayav a chatos for wearing it on her finger? So Rav Yemiya says, because we're not just talking about any old woman, we're talking about a woman who is in charge of a treasury. So therefore, we mentioned the other day, Rashi had used the expression that women don't wear signet rings because they're not signing important documents, they're not sending shluchim, etc. But here you have one particular woman who does. So therefore, she needs to send out orders. She needs to send out orders to give out X amount of money to such and such a person or whatever. So therefore, she keeps her signet around, and she often puts it on her finger. Now, it's not considered a tachshit because the fact is women in general don't wear such a thing. So therefore, as we said before, most women are not in that position. So therefore, but for her, it is normal to carry it around by having it on her finger. So that's why she's chayav chatos. Amar Rabbi Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Teras Teisha. Okay, that explains the case with the woman who wears a signet ring as chayav chatos. That's fine. We're talking about, on the one hand, she usually carries it on her finger. Therefore, for her, that's a normal way of carrying. But on the other hand, for everybody else, but for her or for anybody else, it's not considered a tachshit because it's not normal for women to wear it. Fine, so far so good. But Ishmael, what are you going to say about a man? Why men don't usually wear a non-signet ring? So why should they? Why if a man wears a ring without a signet, a plain ring, why should he be chayav chatos? And we said before that he is, because we said Ullah had said before that what we say about a woman, the opposite is true for a man. Ela Omar Rava. So Rava says no. The reason why it's considered for either one, the reason why it's considered carrying is like this. Sometimes a man who regularly has a signet ring, because he's regularly signing letters and whatever that are important that need to have a stamp on it. So he'll sometimes give his wife his ring that has a stamp on it, in order that she should bring it home to the box or the desk or whatever way he keeps it, so she temporarily puts it on her finger, until she gets home and puts it in the desk, in the drawer. Sometimes in reverse, a woman gives her ring that does not have a signet on it, gives it to her husband, to bring it to a craftsman, to bring it to a repair person, to fix it. And then the husband, again, instead of just carrying it around, he temporarily puts it on his finger, until he gets to the repair shop. So therefore, for both of them, it's considered a normal way of carrying it, because there are enough times when they do that that it can be considered as a normal way for them to wear it on their ring, to wear it on their finger. So again, that's the bottom line. Therefore, is that what the kind of ring that a woman is allowed to wear d'oraisa, namely the kind without a signet. A man is so actually, the kind that a woman is also to wear d'oraisa, the kind that has a signet, is also the d'rabbanon for a man. Again, so the kind that a woman is mutter to wear, that a woman is mutter to wear d'oraisa and also only d'rabbanon, namely where it doesn't have a signet, that kind is also d'oraisa for a man to wear, and if he does, then he's chayav chasas, because men don't usually wear such rings. Vice versa, a ring that, because now you have the machlokes rishonim about if it does have a signet. We know if a woman wears one that has a signet, then she's definitely chayav chasas. That's what the Mishnah is telling us. But if the man wears one with a signet, is it also d'rabbanan or is it not that you have the machlokes rishonim that we were mentioning before about whether men are prone to take off their rings and show them off? Rashi says yes, and Tosfos says no. Both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch. So the Alter Rebbe writes that on the second opinion, v'chein ikker, that the primary opinion is the second one, that men are not prone to do that, and therefore it wouldn't be also for him. However, it goes on in Shulchan Aruch to talk about you have certain kinds of tachshitim that are common to men and women, and therefore if they're also for a woman, then they're also for a man, because even though we're saying noshim am b'fnei asman, but if you have something, that's as far as that you have certain things that are considered ornaments for one versus the other, but if you have something that's considered an ornament or an accessory or whatever, equally for both, then it would be also for both of them. So technically what that means is that neither men nor women should be wearing any kind of ring on Shabbos. So nowadays, again, you know, you have the heterim that we talked about that we talked about a few days ago, a couple of different heterim that it mentions in Shulchan Aruch for people wearing jewelry and accessories and whatever that they didn't in the old days for the reasons that we talked about. Is it because maybe because we don't have a true Rosh Hashanah? Or because they're anyway not going to listen if we're moicha and mutter shiur shoyk again, or because nowadays it's much less common for women to take off their jewelry, or men for that matter, to take it off and show it off. So for those various reasons, then you have men and women that wear rings on Shabbos outdoors.
Can you have something that's asur for both and still say am b'fnei atzmam?
No. So what we're saying is noshim am b'fnei atzman. Obviously, it doesn't mean that. So what it means is there are certain kinds of things that are considered a tachshit for one and not for the other. For example, we're saying just because it's normal for women to wear rings without signets doesn't automatically make it normal for men to wear them, and it actually decides chatos for doing so. But on the other hand, you have some kinds of things. You have some kinds of things that are commonly worn by both men and women. Not rings, but other kinds of things. You have other kinds of accessories and things that are worn equally by men or by women.
So those kinds we're saying,
once they're also for women to wear, then they're also for men to wear. There we don't apply this notion of b'fnei atzman.
So b'fnei atzman is not absolute.
But we're saying there's a difference between something which only one of them wears versus the other, versus things that they both wear. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah, v'loba kulya v'loba kevelis, we said a woman is not allowed to wear on Shabbos a kulya or a kevelis. So my kulya, Amar Rav, machbanta. It means what we call in Aramaic, machbanta, which means, Rashi explains, it means a kind of pin or a kind of brooch that she uses to close the front of her shirt. So the word kulya itself actually means round. There's a word in English, cochlea, which means like a snail. It's used, for example, for one of the bones in the inner ear, which is shaped like that. So the word kulya means something round. And Rashi explains that it's a pin that she uses to pin her clothes, the front of her shirt closed. So you have actually in Shulchan Aruch it just mentions generically that she's not allowed to wear it. Although you have Achronim who say, and the reason would be because most women don't wear it. Although you have Achronim who say that maybe we're only talking about if she's not using it at this point to pin her shirt closed, if she's just wearing it someplace else on her dress or whatever as a pin, then it would be also in Chayav Chatos. But if she's using it to keep her shirt closed, maybe it would be Mutter, because then what, she's not going to take it off in the street and open up the front of her shirt or the front of her dress or whatever. Anyway, that's one explanation. The Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rambam and a couple of other Rishonim have a different explanation, that a kolyer is some kind of round thing that she wears around her head. So similar to the tiaras and coronets and whatever that we were talking about earlier in the parak, the difference being that this one apparently is one that most women don't wear, and therefore again it would be considered carrying more than a tachshit. Okay, so that's kolyer. And what is kevelus? And what is kevelus? Amarav chumarta de pilon. It means a knot. It means a knot in which she has pilon, which is some kind of fragrant herbs, or a couple of the Rishonim say that Pilon, Rabbi Chananel, says that it means a mixture of spices. Whatever it is, the point is she wears it when she has body odor. So she wears it hanging around her neck or something in order to keep away the odor. Rabbi Asi says the same thing, that it means the chumar to the Pilon. So therefore, we're saying that she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos. So, Tana Rabbanon, like Pesa de Kevelos, she's not allowed to wear this Kevelos on Shabbos. The Yotza Chayavas Chasas Divir Meir. Reb Meir then said, he's a Tana Kama of Om Mishnah, who said that if she wears it on Shabbos, she's actually Chayav Chasas, because it can't be considered a Tachshit, as the Gemara is going to say in a second. It's like many of the other things we mentioned in the parak. She's not allowed to wear it, but if she did, she's potter p'tura. Then, because it's only also the rabbanon, they say, like many of the other jewelries and accessories that we learned earlier in the parak. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a yotzei b'kevelos l'chatchila, and Rabbi Eliezer says she's actually allowed to wear it l'chatchila. There's no issur on it, even the rabbanon, Rabbi Eliezer says. So Gemara says, "B'mai kumifagi." What's the underlying machlokas? What's the underlying machlokas between the three of them? So like this, Reb Meir sova masrihu. Reb Meir holds that the kevelas is actually considered a masri. It's considered a burden because it's not the kind of thing that a woman normally wears. She's wearing it in order to hide her body odor, and therefore it can't be considered a tachshit. In other words, because she's wearing it more for a functional purpose, more than as a decoration, and therefore a male would say it's considered a burden. But a bonan sabri tachshitu, that a bonan hold, it is still considered a tachshit. Dilma shalfo machavya v'osu l'isuya. But the problem is, again, like many of the other tachshitim that we mentioned in this parak, she's not allowed to because she may take it off and show it off to her friends, and then she's going to come and carry it on Shabbos, like many of the other things we mentioned. Rabbi Yezus says, that's not a problem, because man darko lemirne, after all, who after all wears such a thing? Isha shereicha ra, only a woman who has body odor is going to wear such a thing. The isha and isha shereicha ra lo shalfo machabia. If she's wearing it, then she's not going to take off. She's not going to take it off and show it off because she doesn't want people. What does she want? She wants people to know that she has body odor. She doesn't want that. So therefore, she's not going to take it off and show it off. And show it off to her friend, says her mayor. Therefore, so that she's not going to take it off. Therefore, she's not going to end up taking it. So therefore, she's not going to end up carrying it for Amos and Rishas Rabin. Okay. So that's the three way machlokes is then. So the question is. Ramosha Feinstein and Dibris Moshe talked about this a little bit. He says that the Chum say, look, now after all, the thing itself is made out of gold or silver or whatever. And Adarabah, she may daska take it off for a moment in order to show, look, it's not, I'm not wearing it only because I have body odor. If that were the case, I would be keeping it on the whole time. The fact that I'm taking it off for a minute and showing it around to my friends is adaraba. That would demonstrate that I don't have body odor. So that's why the chachamim are saying that. That's why the chachamim are saying that she's also to do it because she may show it around to her friends. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda takes the view that they may know of this, but they're still not going to talk about it as much. And if she shows it off to them, then they're going to start talking about it all the more, and it'll be more of a gnai for her. So the question is, we learn in another braisa that Rabbi Yehuda says she's potter if she wears a kevelas or a tzlichus shel hayavin. He is the chachamim of our Mishnah. When we said poteres, then that's the same as the Chachamim are saying in our Mishnah. Now, we just said in the previous Braisa that Rabbi Eliezer actually allows it even to Rabbanim. So what do you mean, Poteres? Usually the word Potter in Hilchos Shabbos usually means Potter Aval Oser. The answer is, Leikasha, Hoki Koy Adirameir, Hoki Koy Adirabanim. The answer is, it depends whether Rabbi Eliezer is referring to what Rabbi Meir says or what the Rabbanim are saying. Like this, Ki Koy Adra Meir, when he's referring to what Rav Meir says, where Rav Meir has said Chayev Chatos, then Omalei Poser, then Rabbi Eliezer, to Rabbi Eliezer tells Rav Meir, actually, don't say this, Chayev Chatos, just, it's Poser, she's Poser from a Chatos. So he just wants to focus on Rav Meir. You're telling me she's going to have to bring a Chatos for wearing it on Shabbos? No, she's not going to have to bring any Chatos for it. He's not even getting into the question of whether it's Mutter to Rabbanon or whatever. Different gears there that Tosfos near the beginning of the Masechta brings that Rabbi Eliezer is saying like this: me, I hold that it's also even that it's also that it's mutter even derabanan. You want to say it's also? Why on earth are you saying it's also deraisa? The worst it should be is also derabanan. Anyway, so that's the episode. So therefore, he's referring to the mayor when he's saying potter. He's not saying I myself hold it's potter. I myself actually hold it's mutter, but relative to what you're saying, chayim chasas, I'm telling you potter. He koya the rabbanon, but when he's referring to the rabbanon, the amri potter aval oser, where they say potter aval oser, then he wants to point out to them omri you mutter lachatchila. Then he tells them actually no, it's actually mutter lachatchila, not like you're saying. So Rabbi Eliezer is in fact saying it is completely mutter, but when he's referring to the mayor who said chayiv chatos, then he just steps it down one level and says potter. So Gemara says umay Rabbi Meir. Where do we see Reb Meir's opinion without the Rabbanon? Now, before we had a three-way machlokes, but then it's not logical to say that Reb Meir is only referring to what Reb Meir says, because I bet Reb Eliezer is referring only to what Reb Meir says, because after all, I mean, he has the Chachamim to consider also. So why is he using an expression that implies that he's only arguing with Reb Meir? So we have to find a braisa where we find only Reb Meir's opinion and Reb Eliezer's opinion, where then we can say that it's logical to say that in that braisa, Reb Eliezer addresses himself to the mayor and says, you're saying Chayev, I'm saying Potter. So where do we see such a braisa? So like this, Titania, because we have another braisa. A woman is not allowed to go out on Shabbos holding a key in her hand. And if she does go out, then she's chayev chatos, because you're not allowed to carry a key on Shabbos. You actually have a different girsa that is not a key that she's holding in her hand, because then it's poshut that it's also, but rather that we're talking about a key that's on her finger, which in that case would mean even if she's wearing the key as a piece of jewelry, it would be also, which is what we were talking about the other day, about the question about using, about Shabbos key belt. It's actually not so simple. You have poskim that say that you're actually not allowed to wear a key belt on Shabbos because you're wearing it primarily for the purpose of the key, even though you are using the key as a belt, to hold a belt closed or as a tie clip or whatever, but the fact is you're making it primarily for the key and it looks like you're carrying the key on Shabbos, so therefore it would be also okay. So it mentions, so as we mentioned the other day, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch you have different opinions on that subject, whether you're allowed to do that. The general minhag is that you are allowed to, although partly it mentions, and partly the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch that maybe it's also based on the general hefter we have nowadays of wearing jewelry, the various etatim that we talked about before. Anyway, give it a mayor. So the mayor says that if she wears the key like that, if she holds it or has it on her finger or whatever, then she's chayav chatas. Rabbi Eliezer poter bekevelas of the tzloichos shafayotin. Rabbi Eliezer says she's poter if she wears the kevelas or the tzloichos shafayotin that we mentioned in the Mishnah. So the question is, there's something missing in this braisa. Kevelas man dechar shema. Who said anything about a kevelas? Rabbi Meir had said that Rabbi Meir had said a key. Why is Rabbi Eliezer all of a sudden bringing in the kevelas, the bundle that had the bundle of spices, or the jar, the jug of spices, the jug of fragrant oil? What does one have to do with the other? And the answer is chasuri mechzer. The braisa is missing words. But hachi katani, what the braisa means is as follows: v'chein b'kevelas, v'chein b'tzroichas shafayotin leitzei. Rabbi Meir says the same thing that's true as far as a key is also true as far as the bundle of spices and all the kevelas, and also as far as the tzloichas shafayotin, the little jar of fragrant oil. All of those, Rabbi Meir would say, Moiteste, the Imyasa Chayavis Chatas, and if she does, then she's Chayav Chatas, Divir Abbeir, because Rabbi Meir says all of that is considered carrying. Rabbi Eliezer points to Kevelas, and the Tzlechel Shafayotin, Rabbi Eliezer says she's potter with the last two, so the key he's going to agree is also on Shabbos, but the other two things, he'd say, as he said before, he actually says that it's mutter, and he's only saying potter because in reaction to the mayor who's saying chayev, then Rabbi Eliezer tells him you're not chayev chasos, you're potter. But actually Rabbi Eliezer himself holds that you're actually mutter lachatchila to wear them. Okay. Continues the braisa. Bamed bonam amurim. When do we say? When am I saying? Rabbi Eliezer says that she's allowed to wear them on Shabbos. Kishayesh behem boisim. When there are spices or oil in them, then it's normal to wear it, so therefore it can be considered a tachshit for her. Avo ein behem boisim, but if as we said, we're not going to ask her at Midrabbanan, and Rabbi Eliezer says, because she's not going to take it off and show it off to her friends, because she doesn't want to draw attention to her body odor. But avol ein behem boisim, but if the container is empty and there's no actual fragrant material in it, all you have is the fragrance that it absorbed left in it. Then Rabbi Eliezer agrees should be chayev chatas for it because the keli itself is not considered a tachshit. Amar of Adaba Abba, so Rabbi Adaba Abba says in that case zoyse meres, based on what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, that if the container is empty, she's going to be chayev chatas. Now you have to consider it like this. The container is empty. There's no actual spices or oil in it, but it's still absorbed. A fragrance from before when it had them in it. Now, on the face of it, we're going to assume Rav Adaba Abba is going to assume that the fragrance that's left over is still considered something that has significance. So therefore, in other words, it's still considered as though the keli has a certain amount of fragrance in it, a certain amount of fragrant material. So Zoyse Menes, Rav Adaba Abba says, in that case, we can deduce from that as follows. Hamotzi oichlin pochot mikashir v'keli. Suppose a person carries out on Shabbos a smaller amount of food than the shear that itself would make him mikhayev chatos, but it's in a keli. Now we're going to learn at the end of the next perek, and in the following proc and after that, we're going to learn that various things that a person carries on Shabbos, there's a minimum amount that if he carries them, he's chayev chatos. Different kinds of things, each one depending on the amount of that kind of thing that has a minimum function. We're going to talk about you can have a case where a person considers valuable even a smaller amount, and then he's chayev for that. But we're talking about for a regular person. For a regular person who's not particularly storing away small quantities of these things, then there's a certain quantity of each item that a person would have to carry to be chayev on Shabbos. Less than that, he'd be positive. One of them is food. Food, the rule is it has to be at least the size of a gregaris, of a dried fig. Less than that, he'd be potter. Now, so Rav Adaba Abba is saying like this. So if you have, later on we're going to learn that if a person carries out, so suppose a person carries suppose a person carries out a gregarious of food on Shabbos, so he's chayev chatos. If he carries it in a keli, then same thing, he's still chayev chatos. But what if he carries later on, we have a Mishnah later on in our Masechtah that says that suppose he carries less than the shear of food, but it's inside a keli, then he'd still be potter. I'm carrying the keli, doesn't matter. The keli is bottled to the food, and the food is less than the shear. And therefore, he'd only be also the rabbanon. So sort of Adabava is saying, apparently that's not correct according to Rabbi Eliezer. Apparently according to Rabbi Eliezer, Hamotzi Oichin Pochus Nekashir of a Keli, if he carries less than the shear of food in a Keli, Chayev, then apparently Rabbi Eliezer is going to say that he is Chayev, because the Keli is not bottle fit. Because after all, in the case of the Kevelas and the closest Shofar Yotin that we're talking about over here, when there's no material in it, it should be considered like there's still less than a shear, because after all, you do have fragrance that it absorbed. Because Tani Chayevus, and still Rabbi Yazir is saying she's Chayev Chafin. So you don't say that the Kevelas is bottled for the remaining fragrance. You say, therefore, that she's chayev for carrying the keli by itself. So the same thing should apply if she's carrying a keli, if a person carries on Shabbos a keli with less than the shear of food in it. So Rav Ashi Yoma, on the other hand, Rav Ashi says no. But Alma e Malach Potter, not necessarily is that a valid comparison. Usually you could actually say that even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that he's Potter, because you would say that the food is less than the shear, and the keli is bottle for the food. But the shiny hacha, the lesser, the mamasha klal, it's different over here. There's no actual mamasha, so there's no tangible. In that case, you have food, you just have less than the shear, but it is tangible. Over here, you have no tangible. You have nothing tangible in the keli at all. All you have is a fragrance, and therefore you can't say. So you could say maybe that a keli is bottle to any amount of food as long as it's tangible, even if it's less than the shear. But you can't say, not necessarily, but you wouldn't say that the same thing applies to an intangible fragrance. So that would be the difference. Why Rabbi Eliezer is making her chayev over here, but he would agree that over there the person would actually be bottle. Now that we talked about the halachas involving tal yotzin and involving the fragrant oil, now we're going to talk about some agadah in connection with it. You have a nevuah of Amos where he criticizes the Jewish people that they're enjoying themselves when the Nevi'im are warning that there's going to be punishments and disasters coming soon on the Jewish people, and they're still busy just enjoying their personal pleasures and whatever. And he's criticizing them for that. So one of the things he mentioned is in that connection, the racious shmonim yimshachu. They anoint themselves with the head of spices, like the beginning, the most important of spices. So what is that? This refers to pal yotzin that they would anoint themselves with. And so then again, the Navi is criticizing them. How could you be doing that? Don't you realize that there's going to be trouble coming on the Jewish people soon if you don't do tshuva, and therefore you should be focusing on that rather than on your own personal enjoyment. So it's pal yotzin because it's the most important. Rashi says mulcho shebashmonim. It's the most important of all fragrances. So therefore, it's called rishis. Most of Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, I have a contradiction. We learn at the end of Sota, it talks about various things that the Chachamim asked after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed because of our Avelos to it. And you have like this, a Braisa says, Apa Pal Yotin Gozer Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava wanted to make a Zera that you can't wear Pal Yotin either, Velo Hodu Loi, and the other Chachamim didn't agree with him. Now, the E Amit Mishum Taino, if you're telling me that the Pasuk is mentioning this balsam oil, this pal yotzin, if the Pasuk is mentioning Mishum Taino, and the Pasuk is mentioning that it's a matter of pleasure, Amai Lehoidolo, then why didn't the Chum agree with him? The Pashtus, anything that the Chum should be asking us, any of those kinds of things that I'm mentioning, any of those things that the Navi is mentioning over there, should be also as a matter of timing. So why didn't the Chum agree on my Lehoidolai? Why didn't the Chum agree with Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava on that? Amalei Abayas. Abayas says to Rabbi Yosef, V'litai Mech, nu, and according to your own Svara, you could ask similarly. What about Hodichtiv Ashoitin Mizrukei Yayin? You have a Pasuk also over there in that same Nevuah of Amos. A couple of psukim earlier. He mentioned at the beginning of the same pasuk. Hashoytim mizrak yayin. They drink wine out of a mizrak. Now the simple meaning of mizrak means a very large bowl. But there's not a particular kind of drinking out of a large bowl as opposed to a smaller cup. So therefore, the Gemara is looking for another. So the Gemara is looking for another meaning of it. That would be more matter of timing, because that way it would be similar to the oil that it mentions next. And so, so what does it mean? Rab Ami v'Rab Asi. So Rab Ami and Rab Asi argue what Mizrake Yayin means in this pasuk. Chad Alma Knishkinin. One says that it means drinking out of a container called a Knishkinin, which is a container that has, it's a container that has two or more straws attached to it. A container, Rashi says, a glass container that has two openings or two straws attached to it, and two people can drink out of it at the same time. So it's called Mizrak, because, like, in a certain sense, the wine is getting thrown from one side to the other. Like, first one person can be drinking out of one side, and then another person on the other side, or both at the same time. And so one of them says that that's what the Mizrak of this pasuk is what's called Knishkinin. V'chadoma, the other one says, Shemizorkim, Kaisesei, and Zelozeh. The other one says it means they would throw their cups of wine to each other. They were experts at juggling. We know the famous Gemara in Sukkah about Rabban Gamliel during Simchas Beis Hasheva he would be juggling eight cups of wine and none of them would spill. So the same thing over here. These people were experts at doing that. They would throw the cup of wine one to the other and it wouldn't spill. So that's the other meaning of Mizrake Yayin. So what are you going to say, says Abaya? Are you going to say, Hochinami the Osir? Are you going to say, based on what you're arguing, that should be Osir? You're arguing that Tal Yotin should have been Osir because it's a matter of Tainug, and therefore you would say the same thing is true as far as these things. But we see, we see that Rabba Bar Rav Huna one time visited the household of the Reish Kavusa, the Shosabit Knishkinin, he drank and he saw that the Reish Kalusa was drinking out of a Knishkinin, and Rabbi Bar Rav Huna didn't say that there's anything wrong with it. So obviously there's no issue of drinking with a Knishkinin. By the way, you do have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that mentions there's an issue drinking wine out of a Knishkinin together with a Goy, because then you have the problem that depending who's drinking first, you may have that the Goy caused wine to flow back into the container, and therefore it's going to be also. But without getting into that, we're talking about if it's two Jews drinking together, apparently there's no issue in drinking from a Knishkinin. So you see that just because almost mentions it in the pasuk over there doesn't mean that it's also. So what's the problem then with wearing palyotin? So like this, so palyotin can very well be reishis shimonim, and nevertheless, it's not going to be also after the korban, the same way as knishkinin aren't also after the korban. So what's Rabbi Yosef's problem? So what's Rabbi Yosef's problem with that? Ella, no. The rule is like this. Kol midi the ispe tainug the ispe simcha. Anything we have involved with his tainug, with his pleasure, and the simcha, gozur rabbanon, then the rabbanon made a gzera on it and said, therefore, that you're not allowed to do it after the korban. Avol midi the ispe tainug, but let's say simcha like gozur rabbanon. Where there is tainug involved, but there's no simcha, then the rabbanon didn't make a gzera on it. So the same thing. So when it comes to palyotin, there is tainug. It's not necessarily associated with simcha, therefore it's fine. Knishkinin also the same thing. It's tainug. You have a pleasure of drinking wine like that with somebody else, but there's not specifically simcha involved. So therefore it's mutter. But therefore, yes, you can say that reishis shmonim does mean palyotin, and the Navi is criticizing the Jewish people. How are you getting yourselves involved in luxuries like that when you should be worrying about what's about to happen to the Jewish people and working to do tshuva and to get other people to do tshuva, but we're not going to say that it was also after the Churban. So again, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava disagrees, but the Chachamim disagreed with him. This that we're saying, by the way, the difference between tainug and simcha, I saw an interesting explanation that it explains a din that we have when Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos and is nidcha, or when Erev Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos. We know that on the one hand, we know that when in that case, when Tisha B'Av is going to be on Sunday, then you don't, and on Matzah Shabbos and Sunday, you don't do a regular Sudah of Sekis. You can have a regular Sudah, because Sudah Shloimeh B'Shaita, as it says in Shulchan Aruch. But on the other hand, on such a, but on the other hand, you're not allowed to learn Torah that afternoon, and that's why we don't do Pirkei Avos, for example. So what's the difference? If you allow, if you're not supposed to be showing the Avelus of Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, then why already are you not allowed to learn Torah? So I saw an explanation from one of the Achronim that says that actually that's the difference, based on our Gemara over here, about Tainug versus Simcha. Eating and drinking is Tainug, Oineg Shabbos, the Chachamim don't want to ask for that on Shabbos, even when that Shabbos is going into Tisha B'Av. Therefore, you're allowed, you just have to finish eating before Shkia, obviously. But when it comes to learning Torah, the reason why you're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av is not so much because of Tainug, but rather because of Simcha. Simcha, you don't have a particular, there's no particular mitzvah of Simcha of Shabbos. Simcha is more mitzvah on Yom Tov. Therefore, we can impose the rule that you shouldn't, that you're not supposed to be learning on that Shabbos. Or after, or at least on that Shabbos after Chatzos, is the case maybe. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to go on to explain another pasuk that in that Nevuah, a couple of psukim over here. The pasuk, the Navi is criticizing the Jewish people for things that they're doing. The Pashtus, everything that he's criticizing them for is for the luxuries and the comforts and whatever that they're involved in, rather than working on improving the ruchniistic state of the Jewish people. So one of those psukim is Hashoichvim al mites shein, people who lie on ivory couches or ivory beds, or sruchim al arsoitam, and they are sruchim on their beds. The simple meaning of sruchim means like sprawled out, like you have by the Mishkan, you have by the Mishkan over there, the serach ha'odesh, the extra length of the Urias Yizim that was spread over the back of the Mishkan. But the Gemara wants to find a different meaning in the word sruchim, because otherwise it's basically the same thing as lying. What's wrong with lying? If you're lying, what's wrong with being sprawled out? So Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina says, this teaches us that these people were urinating naked in front of their beds. Meaning, in other words, that, so if they had to get, the word sruchim can also mean smelly. So it means that they're making their bedroom smelly. So in other words, what they're doing is, if in the middle of the night they have to go to the bathroom, they don't get up and go outside and then urinate like they should. Instead, they're just doing it right there in the bedroom. And as we're going to see in a minute, the Gemara is going to say that such a thing brings a person to be poor. So Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina says that's what the pasuk means. With the sruchim al arsoitam, that they're making their beds and their bedrooms smelly by urinating over there. And by the way, it doesn't mean that if the person does it dressed, then he's any better. It means the fact that he's doing it right there in the bedroom on the floor, as the Gemara is going to say soon, is the problem. The reason why we're mentioning it, he's undressed, is because practically speaking, that's why he doesn't want to bother going outside. He doesn't want to bother getting dressed and going outside. Okay. Megadeth bar Rababohu, but Rababohu criticized that. Megadeth literally means cursed, although you have an explanation from the Goinim that the word Megadeth, the Oruch, brings from Reb Shuda Goin, that what it means is he made a motion with his hand. Like sometimes the word Megadeth, according to that, literally means wiping. So like you have, like when a person is saying, you think that's an explanation or whatever? If he makes a motion with his hand, that's the kind of motion we're talking about, Reb Abohu said, when he heard this explanation. How could it be? Ihochi, if so, Hainu Dichtiv, the pasuk continues, after it mentions all these things that these people are doing wrong, it says, Lochen ata yiglu b'rosh golim, therefore now they're going to go into Golos at the head of all of the other ones, meaning they're going to be going into Golos first. So what do you mean? What does that mean? I mean, okay, you're not supposed to urinate in front of you in your bedroom over there because, as we're going to say, it makes you poor, but that it should cause golos and that they should be the first ones to go into golos. That's the punishment is disproportionate to what they did wrong. So it can't mean that that's what the pasuk is criticizing them for. Ela Amar Rababo. So Rababo says no. What it means is like this. The pasuk is referring to people who eat and drink one with the other, the dovkin mitaseihem zubazu, and then after they've had a good, comfortable meal and drink, they put their beds next to each other, or machlifin nishaseihem zaimzeh, and they exchange their wives with each other, they start being mizana with each other's wives, or masrichin arsoitim, mashichlas yara, shenishalahem, and thereby they make their beds smelly and dirty with shichlas zera that doesn't belong to them. That's not appropriate for them. So that's what the pasuk is mentioning, and that's what the pasuk is criticizing them for and saying for doing that kind of avera. They deserve to be going into Golos first. So actually, you have, by the way, in Rav Yossi Bar Chanina's explanation that's talking about urinating. One thing is some of the scholars should point out you have the word shesen, which is the Hebrew word for urine. So therefore, you have an explanation. Therefore, that mitzvah shein can refer to something involving urination. Then Yehoyada says, okay, Rav Yossi Bar Chanina agrees that just the urinating by itself is not enough to send them into galus, but he says that if you're still talking about the situation like Rav Abahu was talking about, where everybody is eating and drinking together and then going to sleep together in the same room, what happens if a person is getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom? So if the man is exposing themselves to the women and the women to the men, and therefore you end up, fine, maybe they're not actually doing arayas, but they're coming pretty close to it. And Rav Yossi Bar Chanina says that would be enough to get them galus. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Abahu, v'ami lav masnis atana. Rav Abahu said, or others say, we learn in a braisa, gimel dvarim mevien es adam yedei anius. There are three things that if a person does them, they bring them to be poor. The Elohim, they are as follows. Number one, hamash in mind with nemichase arum, where he urinates naked in front of his bed, as we said. The second one is where he's careless with Netilat Yadayim. He doesn't wash properly, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute. And the third one, v'she'ishten kalalte b'fanam, a man whose wife curses him in his presence. So we're going to explain what all these three things. Hamashin mayim with nemi tase orum omar rava loyamaran elodem ahader api l'puryei. When we're saying that he shouldn't be urinating in front of his bed, that's only if he's facing towards his bed. Avol lebroi lasandav, but if he's turning away, and after all, he's a man we're talking about, and it spritzes far away, then it's not a problem. Then it doesn't bring him to being poor. And even if he's facing the bed, it's not a problem unless he's doing it directly on the ground. Avol b'mona lasandav, but if he's doing it into a container, into a bucket or whatever, then there's no problem with it, and then he can do that. So he said, if a person is careless with a tilsidayim, so what does that mean? It means if he doesn't wash his hands at all when he's supposed to, for example, before he eats bread. But if he washes his hands, but he doesn't wash properly, for example, so Rashi says he just uses the bare amount. He just uses the bare amount of water. A revius is technically the minimum amount you need to wash. So he does exactly that. He does exactly a revius. Lav milta, then it's not a problem. Then it's not a problem with it. Then it's not going to bring him to be poor. Marshall points out also you actually have a case where you're able to wash with even less than a revius. So let's say, for example, you have somebody else washing his hands and some water from his hands drips onto yours. So technically that's not really actually. Shiore tara is where you have one person use the cup and then you're using whatever water is left in the cup. Technically you're allowed to, but it's not really the right way to do it. But Robert is saying, nevertheless, that's not going to bring a person to poverty. However, the Gemara says, v'lav milti, actually that's not correct. Using just the bare amount can also bring a person to be poor. A person should use the proper amount of water, a generous amount of water. The Amar of Chista, as Rav Chista says, Ano mashoi maloi chof naimaya, I wash my hands with a full double handful of water. The Yaguli maloi chof nai tivusa, and minashemayim they gave me a double handful of bracha because I used a lot of water for until it's dying before I eat. Therefore, Hashem gave me a generous amount of wealth. So that's the opposite of what Rava is saying. So that's the opposite of what Rava is saying, that if a person just uses the bare amount, then there's no problem with it. Okay. This is brought in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, at the beginning of Shulchan Tzilos Yadayim, and the Alter Rebbe also brings it at the beginning of Seder Tzilos Yadayim, that the person has to be careful with Tzilos Yadayim, as we're saying over here. So have to be careful to use a generous amount of water and to make sure that he washes properly, that his hands are clean beforehand, and the water covers his whole hand, etc. There is, by the way, a famous story that they say about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that one time he was a guest by somebody's house, that there was a rich person who lived up on a hill, and he washed with just a bare amount of water, and the Balabas asked him why, and Rabbi Yisrael explains to him, because like this, you don't have piped water in your house, you have your maid has to go and draw water from down the bottom of the hill, and I didn't want to be matriach her to have to draw more water than necessary. And that's an exceptional case, but nowadays, when we have faucets, then yes. Okay. We said the she'ishtim kalalta b'fanav. We said a man whose wife curses him in her in his presence. What does that mean? Amarava al iske tachshikeha. That means when she's cursing him because he doesn't provide her the proper tachshikim that are appropriate for a woman of her standing. Tachshikim, by the way, can be jewelry. It can also mean makeup or whatever. Bahani mili hu de isrei v'loy ovid. However, that applies. That we're saying that's going to make him poor is only if he has enough money for it and he doesn't do it because he's stingy. So therefore, the idea is, like, he doesn't want to supply his wife's needs, and she depends on him, so therefore, Minashamayim, they're not going to supply him what he needs either. So that's why we're saying that it brings to Anius. The Me'iri actually has a very interesting kind of balabapish explanation of why should all these three things bring a person to Anius. He says the first two, if a person is too lazy to get out of bed and get dressed and go urinate, and he just does it on the floor, and not even turning around, or he's too lazy to wash his hands properly. So that's going to carry over into other things in life. He's going to be too lazy to hold down a proper job and make panos, so therefore he's going to get poor. And as far as the case where his wife curses him, the idea is if he's so insensitive to her needs, then she's going to start getting careless with managing the household. And again, therefore, it's going to bring him to be poor because things are going to get lost or broken or not dealt with properly that usually she manages them. Okay. Talking more about jewelry and ornaments and perfume and whatever that Jewish women wear. So now the Gemara is going to quote and darshan a series of psukim, mostly recording one pasuk in Yeshaya that also criticizes the behavior of the Jewish women in Yerushalayim in the years before the Churban. So the pasuk says, "Dorash Rava Bered Rabbi." My dichtiv, Vayomer Hashem, Yan ki govu, the whole passage goes like this. Vayomer Hashem, Yan ki govu b'nois tiyan, because the b'nois tiyan are being high up, vatelachna metuyes doron masakros enayim, they go with their necks stretched out and with their eyes masakros, which means looking around, we'll talk about it, what it means. Holach betofa telachna, they go around walking as if they're floating, over aglayim takasna, and with their feet, they cause anger. So the Gemara is going to dash in that passage phrase by phrase what it means. What are they doing wrong? Vayomer Hashem Yan ki govu b'nois tzion. They're walking high. Means shohei machalchus b'kaimas kufa. Means that they're walking. Means that they're walking with an upright posture like this. In Bechlal it says in Shulchan Aruch, based on other Gemaras, that a person should not walk completely with an upright posture because as if they're pushing away the Shechina, like as if like I'm important enough that there's no room around me for the Shechina. A person should be walking with their head down a little bit. Now, not all the way down. You don't need to be looking at your toes. You need to be looking. The Rambam describes that a person should be walking around in the street as if like the way a person would walk. Like the way a person would walk when he's busy, like, you know, when he's preoccupied. You're preoccupied with something, so you have your head down a little bit. So that's these women were not doing that. They were walking very upright. The pasuk continues, they were walking with their neck outstretched. That means, it means that they're walking with heel next to toe. They're taking very small, mincing steps. With the idea being, in other words, where Rashi explains, what does that have to do with their neck stretched out? If their neck is held high, then they can't see where their feet are. So therefore, necessarily, they take small steps. But the reason they were doing that is because they wanted to call attention to themselves. They wanted to see people. They wanted to attract men's attention. And this way, like, they're walking extra slow. When the pasuk continues, they were masakrit inayim. They have a molon kuchla inayu. What it means is that they would put eyeshadow, they would fill up their eyes with eyeshadow, they'd put eyeshadow around their eyes, on the Ramzan, and they would wink at men when they're walking by. So the word masakris therefore actually has a double meaning. It's related to the word sikra, which is a type of dye, and it's also related to the word skira, like which means to gaze. So they were gazing and winking at the men to get them to be mezanim with them, or at least to attract attention to themselves. Holech b'tofa, if the pasuk continues, they're going and floating. What does that mean? A tall woman would always make sure to walk next to a short woman so she looks like she's floating over her, and that way, like, it shows off her height to greater effect. Rashi mentions all of this. We're talking about these are all married women, so therefore they have no business trying to attract anybody's attention. Over Aglayan Ta'akasna, when we said that with their feet Ta'akasna, so what does that mean? So Rashi explains the word Eches means the poison of a snake. It's related to the word cast, actually. You have many words in Hebrew where you get the same word. You get basically the same word by moving around the letters, like Keves and Kesev and Simla and Salma. So what does it mean? Omer of Yitzchak Dvei Ramani, Melamed Shematilas Mur V'Asarisman B'min Aleihen, these Jewish women would put mur and asarisman, various kinds of fragrant oils or spices, B'min Aleihen, in their feet, in their shoes, or Mahalchus B'Shukah Yerushalayim, and they would walk around in the streets of Yerushalayim, B'Kivin Shemagiyas Esav Achori Yisrael, when they would reach new Jewish young men, Boyakeris B'Karsa, they would kick the ground with their feet, or machizes aleihem, and they'd spray some of the perfume from their shoes on them, or machnisis ben yetzahara ke'eres bakos, and they're causing a yetzahara to enter these young men like the poison of a snake. So that's what they were doing wrong. By the way, I once saw an interesting point. I think I saw this in one of Rav Avigdor Miller's svarim. I think it was. He says, you know, you see from this description over here, we're not talking about these women are going around with short sleeves or their dress is not buttoned up properly or their hair exposed or whatever. Nobody would have tolerated that in those days. So even these women, even if they want to be mezana or whatever, they wouldn't have the chutzpah to go out like that in public with violating actual halachas of sneers because they know nobody would tolerate it. They know they'd immediately people would be calling them on it and not, you know, like you have in Meir Shalom nowadays, which is in a certain sense as it should be. So what are they doing? They're doing these various kinds of things that are like not in the spirit of sneers, but not actually violating the actual technical halachas of sneers. So you see from that how careful the people were with mitzvahs in those days. You know, nowadays we see women all the time walking around where they're not particularly being careful with the actual halachas of sneers, and nobody has the brave kite to go and tell them anything because you don't really want to make a scene. Anyway, continues the Gemara. The fact is, though, with saying that they're doing this in order to attract attention that they shouldn't, especially if they're married women, my poran aseihem. So what is the punishment that Hashem gave them for that? So that's a few psukim later. Kedidorash Rav Barav Ola. As Rav Barav Ola Darshin, the pasuk a few psukim later, after the pasuk mentions these various things that they're doing, V'hoya tachas boisem machmiya. The pasuk says, instead of these spices, there will be rotting, which means makim shayim mitzvahs mitzmaynasim namakim, the places on their bodies where they would apply perfume and spices is now going to be rotting away. The tachas chagodan mikvah. The pasuk continues, instead, where there was the belt, there was going to be nikva, which means wounds, makim shayim chaguris betziltel, in the places on their bodies where they would wear a tziltel, a fancy belt, which in fact, Maharsha points out, based on other Gemaras, was often the kind of belt that women would wear in order to attract attention, zonus or whatever would wear in order to attract attention. Instead, that area, nasan, the kofim is going to be full of wounds. The sachas masen miksha, and instead of the place of miksha, of something hard or something cast, korcha, instead of there, there's going to be boldness, which means makim shayim miskashrit, right, the place on their bodies where they decorated themselves. Rashi explains masen miksha is related to the word miskashrit, decorating. Nasik krochim is going to be a bunch of bald spots. Marsha points out also that the word miksha itself implies something hard, something cast. So it means where they wore golden ornaments. The sachas sigil machgodes sach, instead of sigil, there's going to be which we'll say in a second what sigil is. There's going to be a binding of sackcloth. So what is sigil? Sachim amavim the degila, the entrances that bring the joy, meaning the woman's private parts. Oisemakim, Rashi says, instead, there's going to be yula machgurah sack. That area is going to have to be bound up with sackcloth because they're not going to be able to afford normal clothing. And the pasuk finishes off, ki tachas yoifi, because instead of beauty. So the simple meaning of the word ki means because. However, omar rabba hainu da amri, this is like the expression. People say, chilufi shufra keva, instead of where there was beauty, now there's pain, and now there's wounds. In other words, he's saying the word ki is actually short for the word cave, which means injuries and wounds. Another pasuk in that connection, the pasuk mentions the sipach Hashem kodkod v'noit tziyon. The pasuk mentions that Hashem will sipach the hair, the heads of the daughters of Tziyon. So what is the sipach? Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Malam Shaporcha Behen Tzaraas. It means that they got struck with Tzaraas. Where has the sipach come to mean Tzaraas? Ksiv hachav a sipach, or ksiv hachav a seis v'la sapachas. Because we see that the various kinds of Tzaraas, one kind of Tzaraas is called sapachas, so therefore it's related to the words of a sipach over here. The same pasuk continues, Hashem poshen yo'ora. The pasuk says, Hashem will yo'ora their poshen. So what does that mean? So poshen literally means their openings. So it means their erva, it means oisin makam. Rashi on the pasuk explains that the word poshen also means something like wide open. So what is yo'ora? Rabbi Shmuel, chab omashen nishpuchu kikita, and Rabbi Shmuel argue what it means. One says that it means that they were poured out like a jug. In other words, they became nidos or zavos or whatever, and therefore and that was their punishment. Rashi on the pasuk actually mentions a thing. There were some of these women who said, you know what? Okay, so when the goyim are going to come and take over Eretz Yisrael and capture it and take us all, big deal. I'm a beautiful woman. Good. So I'll marry some rich bodily officer or whatever, and I'll live happily ever after. So what is this? So what did Hashem do? Rashi explains on the pasuk over there that what Hashem did is he made these women now became nidus and zavos, and now the goyish officers want nothing to do with them. So that's one explanation. The other one, between Rab and Shmuel, says that their openings became like a forest. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that originally Jewish women did not have pubic hair, and that was a more attractive thing. Now, after this, the result was that Jewish women started growing pubic hair just like other women, which is therefore less attractive to the man. He's more likely to get tangled in it, etc. So the word yaara according to the first explanation, meloshin ma'ara mikliyo kli, pouring from one keli into another, and according to the other one, it's meloshin yar, a forest, like it's a forest full of hair. More in this connection. So now all this time we're talking about what the women are doing wrong. Let's talk about the men. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Anshe Yerushalayim, Anshe Shachat Hayu. These men of Yerushalayim at that time were very proud people. They were proud of the Averis that they did, and they talked in such a way. Rashi says Medavim Beloshin Gava Velage Safa, like they're talking in like a very high flown language and a secret language of theirs in order to conceal the Averis that they're doing. For example, Adam Oymala Chaveri, a man would say to his friend, what kind of meal did you have today? And he didn't mean a meal, he meant tashmish. The past amela, did you have bread that was well worked over, which means, in other words, a woman who had already previously had relations, or the past shayna amela, or bread that wasn't worked so over, meaning a basula. The yayin gurdali, did you have gurdali wine, which is white wine, or the yayin chowdily, or chowdily wine, which is dark. In other words, was the girl that you were with, was she light-skinned or dark-skinned? The massive rochav or the massive kosher, was it on a wide bed or on a narrow bed? In other words, was the girl fat or skinny? The chover tova, the chover ra, with good company or with bad company? In other words, did she look beautiful or not? Amar Rav Chista v'cholam luznus. The Rav Chista says all of these, even though they're talking in a way that a person who's listening in might think they're just talking about the kind of meal they had today, they understood between themselves very well what they're talking about. They're all talking about as far as what nus they accomplished then. And one more thing about the fragrance of Yerushalayim before the Churban. Amar Rach v'amar Rav Yehuda. After Yerushalayim shokinamin hayu, the trees of Yerushalayim were cinnamon trees. Over shah shah you must stick in their hand. So when they would burn them for a firewood, reichan noidif b'chol Eretz Yisrael, the fragrance of them would go throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael. You could smell the fragrance of the cinnamon that they're burning. Or mishachorba Yerushalayim, but after Yerushalayim was destroyed, nignazu, all of that cinnamon was hidden away. V'lenishtayir elakisaira. All that was left was a little bit the size of a barley grain, or mishkatach the gazoid Tzimtzumoi Malkasa, and you can find it in the treasury of Queen Tzimtzumoi. That's her name. So now, what you actually have is is this actually talking about cinnamon? The Smag, actually, one of the important Rishonim, the Smag points out on the basis of this Gemara, Kinnaman, could that be mentioned as one of the spices of the Torah, we're saying it here in the Gemara, Kinnaman cannot possibly be cinnamon, because there's not so little of it left in the world. You have plenty of cinnamon in the world. So therefore, he says it must be something else. And then the Ramban on the Pasuk, when it describes the Shemen HaMishcha, and it mentions one of the ingredients, and it was Kinnaman, the Ramban has a long discussion over there of a couple of possibilities that various Rishonim bring up of what Kinnaman is. So it's not necessarily the cinnamon that we're familiar with.
Can imagine taking a bunch of trees and taking something from the trees and hiding it. It's a deeper reach. It must be one deeper.
So at least one deeper thing on it. The Chassam Sofer says that what we're really referring to, he says, is we're talking about the accomplishments of the Talmud Chachamim in Yerushalayim that used to be. It used to be the Talmud Chachamim are compared, the Talmud Chacham on the one hand is compared to a tree. On the other hand, he's also a true Talmud Chacham should also be more like cinnamon, in the sense that cinnamon is very thin sticks. And in fact, one of the explanations that Amban mentions of what Kinnaman is that it's some type of straw, actually, some type of fragrant straw. So that's how a Talmud Chacham should be, that he has the firmness and the longevity and whatever of a tree, combined with the flexibility of straw, as you know, Olam Yehel and Rastakana. So before the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, they had Talmud Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, whose fame and their accomplishments permeated all of Eretz Yisrael. But now, after the Churban, all we have left is you have Kisa'ora. He says Meloshin Sa'ora, Meloshin a storm wind. So you have the Talmud Chachamim have to live in very stormy conditions. And all you find them is the Tzimtzumoi Malkus. So all you find them is like the Mitzumtzum and compressed and squeezed in among in the Golos among the Goyim. That's all we have left compared to before, where their accomplishments and their fame spread throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael and throughout the whole world.
Wow. Was Hashem Kaskeid?
Yeah, we said that. We said it means Hashem gave him Tzaraas.
Why Kakut is associated with Tzaraas?
Well, the Pashtus, the idea is because they're holding their heads high in Gaiva, as we said before. They walked around with their heads and necks held high. The Gemara actually mentions in Erchin, when it talks about the various causes of Tzaraas, one of the things it mentions that a person can get Tzaraas for improper Gaiva. So maybe, I guess that's the connection over here.
I thought Tzaraas was coming from Lashon Hara.
Not necessarily. I mean, there's more than one reason. There's more than one reason for Tzaraas. The Gemara in Erchin mentions seven things for which Tzaraas can come. There are Midrashim, I think, that mention as many as 13. And one of them is Gaiva. One of them is Gaiva. So the Pashtus, when we're talking about over here, that they got Tzaraas on their head, the Pashtus has to do with that.
So why we don't use directly Lashon Tzaraas? There's a cut or Gaiva.
I don't know, because it's a good question, but that's how the Pasuk doesn't always use the direct word. Sometimes the Pasuk is written a certain way so that we can doubt in it. And the fact is, I mean, Mephoshim on the Pasuk have other explanations of the word Besipach. I mean, it means to chop off, so it means like their hair will be chopped off, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, Shivan Panam Latera, right? If it just said they were going to have Tzaraas, you'd only have one way of explaining it. Now that it says the Sipach, Rashi on the Pasuk also brings that it makes Meloshin Shivcha, like they became very low down Shvachos in Galus. Rashi also brings another meaning over there that means the Shvachos, like they had families of lice living in their hair. So there's a lot of when it says the Sipach like this, you have many different possible explanations of what the Sipach can mean.
Generally speaking, Sipach means what?
Well, this is the only place in Tanakh where you have the word Sipach like that with a sting. You have a few other places in Tanakh where you have the word Sipach, where you have that shirt for the Samach. For example, the Pachas we were mentioning, but this is the only place, which is probably also why the Gemara wanted to, which is probably also why the Gemara wanted to douche in it, because the Gemara generally douches these unusual words in Pesukim.
This Gemara is talking about before the first carbon, the second carbon.
What?
This Gemara we look now is speaking mainly about the first Korban or the second Korban.
So the Pesukim are talking primarily before the first Korban. Wow. And the description over here, I guess also, I mean, we know from the Gemara and Yoma, for example, that the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed because of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shefichas Damim. So here we have part of the Gilui Arayos.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so hard to understand when you had the Beis Mikdash, the holiness and all those, waiting years and building up to build that Beis Mikdash, and then you finally have it, and you can be...
Right, I mean, well, yeah.
It's a Kedusha, a Klippa, that's it.
Where there's greater Kedusha, there's greater Klippa, right? And the people who have greater, the people who have a greater, the greater a person, the greater their Yetzer Hara. But again, it is still worth stressing, again, what I mentioned before, that you see from this description over here, that we're not talking about people who are going and publicly violating the din of Tzniyos, because nobody would have tolerated that. Whatever they're doing in secret, but not in secret. You see, as far as the women, they're not violating the actual technical halachas of what they have to cover. They're not dressing and acting in the spirit of Tzniyos. And as far as the men, also, we're saying they're not openly going and bragging about who they're mezana with. They're just doing it among their friends using this coded language that nobody else will understand.
Shkayach.